Oh, yes, there he goes. There he goes. I love the cold opens. What is up, people? I'm finally back after a month and a half hiatus. I'm still alive. Just the Kid from Brooklyn is back on the air. We got my man, a friend of the show from the Struggle Beard podcast, my good brother, Rashad Rashid, in the motherfucking building.
Yeah. It's been a month.
Yeah, I haven't done a show in like a month.
Oh my god.
Since like early July, maybe. I don't know.
Oh wow.
It's been a little over a month. But I'm back. You know what I'm saying? I'm back. And somebody I'm on here with has a comedy birthday. Right?
Yeah.
You just turned 10 years old. You still a baby in the game.
Man, motherfucker, you gonna be there too.
I know. In another month, I'll be 10 years old. We still babies though.
Yeah, but our 10 years, we've come a long way. We've done a lot. We've seen the great and we've seen the terrible. And we continue to see the terrible. So oh man, this time has really put us in a different space.
Yeah.
It's forced us to be a lot more resourceful than before and adapting.
That's true. Comedy during COVID is fun and it's not fun at the same time.
Yeah, but it helps me write better. It helped me write better.
Yeah.
You know, my penman, you know, I can throw down with the pen, but now it has really helped me to write down the details of a lot of my bits,
yeah,
and to really get into you know personal perspective and you know things like that. Because
yeah.
I mean, I was pretty upset when comedians. With the more veteran comedians talking about don't do COVID jokes.
Why? It's our reality.
it's what's happening right now. Here's my thing. They didn't want us talking about the disease specifically.
Mm-hmm.
Everything around it, all the stuff happening around it. And you know, it's of course it's just a lot of quarantine material, mask material. And then that's it.
Yeah, so it's like those are the new hack / stock jokes that everybody's. So those are the new Tinder jokes, ladies and gentlemen.
Those are the new Tinder jokes.
Like, you're tired of Tinder.
Exactly.
Jokes. Now you got them.
it's the same way we're. With black people when they was talking about roaches, now it's masks. Same way they was talking about the club, the supermarket. That's all
you ever be at the club and you see a roach anyway.
Yo, you ever be in aisle 3 and you see somebody with their mask in their back pocket? You'd be like, yo, you're wilding right now.
Oh God. So all right, so you started August 29th,
Michael Jackson's 2010. Birthday. Michael Jackson's birthday.
Yeah, that's right. That is right. That is correct.
I remember I started at the original Eastville Comedy Club on East 4th Street.
Yes, sir.
What was that? First Avenue? No, Second Avenue. Like right on
Second Avenue. Yeah, between Second and Third.
Yeah, between 2nd and 3rd Avenue. And I walked in there. I was like, oh, I'm the funniest dude here. then that white guy energy hit. white male comics are the most judgmental and brutal because it's the same motherfuckers that's just as broke as you thinking they're funnier than you.
Uh-huh.
And it was just one of those eye-opening things. Like, that's who a lot of us start with. You know, yeah. each each comedian starts with a group of starts with a group of comics that's kind of like they're settling. That's their settlement right there. I can settle for this. As long as I can do this 3-4 times a week, I'm a comic. I'm a comedian.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it was like that for me for a couple of years. And then I started seeing the Black circuit. I started seeing my people. And at first, I was very afraid.
Yeah.
I was very afraid because it required a certain kind of energy that I hadn't tapped into yet. Because it was more, you know, it's easier to make white people laugh than Black people. But I was like, I was Black first and foremost. So how was I not able to relate to my people? I just had to sit down and listen to what all the other established Black comics were doing, men and women.
Yeah. Yeah, because you coming from doing the comedy club mics and shows, so you adapted to that style. So then when you come to our side, you're like, whoa.
Right.
They do things different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is like not use material, or they use material. It just sounds like a conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, with the open mics I started with, you know, everybody's very premise set up punchline, set up punchline. Well, I guess that didn't work. So
yeah, it worked last night.
The open mics, and I felt like, and I treated them like real shows,
right? As you should.
You know, you practice the way you perform, and I felt like, you know, I was on a real show. I was nervous as hell. Now, let me ask you something. When you first started, you was doing jokes. Did you forget what you were talking about on stage because you kind of like blacked out, or you were like, I don't know what I was talking about because I wasn't focused on it? Like, what was it?
Yeah, of course. I that's happened to me a couple times. It every once in a while still happens now where you get, I don't know. I think it might be the energy of the audience sometimes that kind of throws you off. Mm. And, you know, as a comic, like, we pay attention to everything. So kind of like you're looking at that one person that's not paying attention and it could throw you off. You're like, wait, where was I? When you're newer, what is the thing that new comics say? I can't remember what they say. They say it's a certain word that a lot of new comedians use when they lose their space. Oh, I think they just actually say it to the audience. Oh, man, I forgot what I was talking about. What was I talking about? And then they'll either remember it or just go on to the next joke.
Yeah. It's like you got to be hella distracted, or you have to just be really zoned out to forget what you just said.
Yeah.
Because, like, I've seen comics get on stage and they're so robotic and they're so calculated that they've done this set multiple times that they'll just go and they don't even realize that they'll say the same joke again later on.
Yo, bro, I won't say who it was. One time I was at a show and a vet was visiting from out of town, and they were closing a show that I was at. And they do a joke in the first 10 minutes of their act and then do it again 25 minutes later. And only the comics picked up on it. I think the audience did too, because they didn't laugh the second go around.
Okay.
Like me and a bunch of the comics in the back, like, yo, he just did that joke like 30 minutes ago. That's always funny.
It's a sign you don't have a lot of jokes in your arsenal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you realize with the Black circuit, you have to be off the cuff.
You do.
Regular jokes. I mean, you can have, you know, regular jokes, but that's only going to go butt so far.
Yeah.
And Black audiences are very demanding when it comes to their comedy. So they're like, make me laugh
now.
Now you right got now. You got 5 seconds to impress me.
Yep. They paid their ticket fee. They got their drinks. They got their wings. They ready to laugh now. They paid their hard-earned money, so you better be tapping and joking at the same time.
Yeah. I had to. You learn quick. I had to learn quick because my first urban show I did was Mocha Lounge. I was about
the legendary Mocha Harlem.
I was about 2 months in, and jeez. I went with another comic over there, mm-hmm. and you know she was just starting out, and we went there, and I was like, oh, I got this. When I realized what I was saying was not funny, I retreated so hard. Oh, man. And Smokey got me. He ain't never coming back here.
But I like your energy, though. You got bad energy, son.
He ain't never coming back.
But I like your energy.
When he said that, I was like, I'm on the right path.
Yeah.
If anything I couldn't remember about Smokey saying about me, oh, he ain't never coming back. But I like his energy, though.
That's his way of saying come back, because he loves when you come back.
Yeah.
He loves that shit.
Yeah.
Because he wants, the thing with Smokey is like, Smokey's the type of vet that, like, he wants everybody to get better. He wants everybody to perform. Like, you know how he does. He'll bring you up, and he'll leave you up there.
Oh, yeah.
And he'll go around the corner, go roll up, smoke. And you be like, yo, 15 minutes, where's Smokey? And you just got to keep going.
Yeah. That room, I didn't do a lot. But I did enough times to where I got to be like, I got to come with my A game.
Yeah.
That was literally the Lion's Den Mocha Lounge on Mondays.
Oh, yeah.
Packed out the ass, just no standing room. But all the comics would take up the side where the window was.
The whole doorway full of comedians.
The whole doorway. Like, you had to have security. They had to have security. You'd be like, nah, I gotta take your hat off.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's like 55 comedians in there. Then the rest is audience. And then everybody moving around. And Smokey is in there killing them. Oh, my God, man. Those days. And it was something interesting I used to do.
What's that?
When I would go there, when I saw what it was like. Mm-hmm. So I just went in there just blindly. Did whatever. Didn't do good. Then I went there with material, no energy. Didn't do good. Then I went there with all energy, no material. So I said, you know what? I waited a while. I said, let me get a good set. This was around the time we did Janelle's.
Okay.
This is that summer, I think, the first time I did Janelle's.
So that was like 2013-ish?
Yeah.
Because that was when we was there.
Yeah. So I think, as a matter of fact, I think we went the same week because Janelle's was on a Wednesday.
Nah, Janelle's used to be Fridays, remember?
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Be Friday.
You're right. So I remember I went up and Sean Harvey was the first host.
Yep.
Sean Harvey was the first host. And did my set, killed it. I remember one lady by the wall near where the DJ booth is. She tried to get up and say something. I said something, shut her down. Had everybody in there laughing. It was the bodega bit. That's what it was.
Okay.
It was the bodega bit. Did that. I think I got an applause break off that. And I got off stage. And Sean Harvey's like, yeah, he gonna go home. He gonna tell his mother on Facebook, yo, ma, I killed Mokas tonight.
I used to love when he used to do that shit.
Say, yo, ma, I killed Mokas tonight.
Do you remember what Sean used to say if a person bombed?
No.
He used to be like, yo, get that bomb and shit out of here. Don't touch it. Don't get that shit on me, man. Get that shit out of here. This nigga ain't never coming back to Mocha.
Oh my goodness. Like,
don't rub that shit on me.
And then that's what he used to I think he was doing something new where he was announcing how much time we did it in.
Yeah, 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 yeah. He said, yo, he killed that shit in 5 minutes and 15 seconds and got out. Second night.
He said, yo, my man right here, he did it in 4:40. He said, look at him. He gonna go home. He's like, yo, ma, I killed Mokas tonight.
Because I'm an old school nigga. Anyway.
Because I'm an old school cat right there.
Yeah.
Remember the Betamax back in the day? Shout out to Sean Harvey.
Yo, shout out to Sean Harvey, man. Oh my God.
But now, you know, pre-COVID, just before pre-COVID, it just has gone down. The audience is not there anymore. Like literally, the pandemic hit Mokas first. Like, that's what happened.
It kind of, it dwindled down crowd-wise. A lot of comics didn't go there as much anymore either.
Because they knew, they saw what it was.
Yeah.
And they didn't know how to adapt from material to being the funny.
Yeah.
Because at Mocha, you got to be the funny.
Yep.
You can have material as long as, you know, it correlates. It's all about, it's really confidence. That's all it is. Material ain't got nothing to do with it. I mean, it does have a large portion to do with it, but I would say 70 to 80% of it is confidence.
Yeah.
If you can have the confidence and go up there and be you, they're going to respect and listen to you. Yep. You ain't got it. Because everybody like, oh, Smokey's so funny. That means I ain't gotta be. That means I'm not that funny. I'm not gonna be as funny as him. Just be you. He hosting the show.
Yeah.
They really there to see y'all. They love Smokey. Of course. They was like, let me see what other funny is out there.
Yeah. That's true. They want to see those faces they never seen before, hear the voices they never heard before, and you know that's the beauty of comedy.
Yeah,
people always want to see new faces. I mean, think about it. You got the host, of course. The host is gonna bring them in, but what's gonna keep the crowd coming back is, oh, you know what? I saw so and so here, and you never know what's gonna happen in a few years with that.
Yeah. One of my favorite things is that if there was a regular there, like the audience, like an audience regular, and you walk in. And somebody be like, oh, he funny. Oh, she hilarious. I saw her three times. I saw him three times. They funny. I think that's one of the best things you can hear.
Yeah. Yeah. You know where that goes on a lot at? Which is why I love, it's my favorite show, is Essence.
Yeah.
Essence is where that goes on, because Essence has been going on for what, close to 15 years, and the same people still go there.
That's crazy.
Even with rotating hosts, you know, Damon Rozier, the original host, passed away, and then it moved on to Marlon and Kenny Williams, and then Miles Green, and now it's Mimi and
Kelly Kells,
right? And the same people, Team Rozier still goes every week. So, you know, not now because it's COVID, but before COVID.
Right.
And yeah, those they see you walk in the building. Like, oh, that's so and so. Yo, what up? You going on? And it makes you happy.
Yeah.
And it gets you pumped. You're like, you know what? I'm gonna have a good set tonight because so and so recognized me, said what up, you know, I hope you're going on. I'm here to see you. That's dope. Makes you feel good. Builds your confidence up.
Yeah, that support is a lot. That's technically your first fan base. When you get those two people, those three people that be like, oh, this is our homie. We come to see him all the time.
Yeah.
Like we like you, man. You came through 2-3 times and you was hilarious, man. You know, so we're a fan of yours. And now you got people that are see if you have, like, if you post something on social media and they're following you. They're like, oh, we're going to go. Yeah, we got tickets. We're going to get tickets. We're going to go.
Yep.
Love that.
It's true, man. True.
But now we got all this virtual comedy happening, which, like I said before, it's really helped my pen game out, but it's very hard when you're trying to do a comedy show and people got shit going on in their house. who's making a smoothie? Like, why is your blender on? Like, cut off your blender. Like, you in the projects. Why do you have a vacuum? You just need, you don't get carpet floors in the projects. What kind of life are you living? What kind of life are you trying to live while being semi-struggling? Like, what are you doing?
You're making margaritas while you're telling jokes.
It's just, a lot of people don't get how to work Zoom, because that's where a lot of us are doing it at.
Yeah.
Or StreamYard. I mean, StreamYard is a little confusing to me, but I'd rather Zoom. So, you know, everybody knows Zoom, you have the mute feature where you can mute yourself and nobody can hear what's going on.
Yeah.
But there's no reason we doing a show and you get a house call and you on your phone talking to whoever and you didn't mute your screen and we can hear your whole conversation. Yeah, man. Yeah, I'm just sitting out. Yeah, he got this little comedy show happening. They're a little funny, you know. Hold on. Oh, my bad, y'all. I ain't mean to. But didn't even mute it. They just turned the laptop over or the little screen over, have it face the table and go dark. Like, we can still hear you.
What are some of your favorite out of town gigs that you've done in the last 10 years?
My favorite is DC, Washington DC.
DC, okay.
Did three shows out there. They were all great. They were at this spot called the Beer Baron, and two were at the Beer Baron. The other one the third spot that I did out in DC was called Busboys and Poets.
Wait, what?
Busboys and Poets. It was a restaurant.
Okay, I thought you said something else. I would be like, wait, that sounds like a strip club.
Nah, but Busboys and Poets was a venue that I did with somebody from the past that I'm not going to name.
Yep. We know. You and I know. I got it.
Yeah. So it was a good show. It was a good show. It was a long show. The sound system wasn't that great, but I did still get a good tape out of it.
So, you don't need a sound system. You're loud ass. We both loud.
I mean, but it still sounded good. It still sounded good. Got a good tape out of it.
Right.
So I love DC crowds.
Yeah.
I love DC. That's a city of people who love comedy.
Yeah.
Because you got the greatest comedian that came from that city.
Yes, sir.
So I mean a lot of great comics came from DC, but the greatest, Dave Chappelle came from that city. So
yes, sir.
So they like virtually anything.
Yeah.
Comedy. Yeah. But I can't say that for sure because, you know, some people, you know, there's some comics that should not be doing it at all. Like, you need to seriously quarantine yourself and take a virtual class or something.
Quarantine for life.
Yes, exactly. I mean, socially distant yourself from stand-up. Like, that's what you need to do. So, right now, with the climate, comedians are like homeless people. We're literally looking around the street for a place to settle and do a show.
Yeah.
And not get kicked away and not get shooed away by the authorities or whatever park rangers are out there. We don't even have park. We just have sad employed park people. Like, that's all they are.
Yeah.
So comedians are looking for spots to do it, to do stand up at. A lot of them pick parks, but where it's really at is rooftops.
Yeah.
All these rooftop shows. Now, the issue with doing it in the park is a lot of us may have to get a permit, depending on where we are, if there's high traffic.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're able to do it in a spot where not a lot of activity, police activity is happening, we'll do it there. So there's some comedians that should not be doing comedy outside whatsoever. Because Justin, I'm gonna tell you what happened.
What happened?
So this past Monday, I host an open mic in Marcus Garvey Park in Harlem.
Harlem.
So I didn't want to do it because I wasn't pushing it that hard, because in Marcus Garvey Park there's a lot of cracktivity that happens. So I was very skeptical about the whole thing, and especially where we were. It's like a small flight of stairs, and you know, everybody's just sitting there, but it's a good space for us to perform. So in Marcus Garvey Park, they have this amphitheater, and the amphitheater, when I first went, I thought that's where the open mic was. So I wasn't hosting. This was like on a Thursday.
Yeah.
This was another comic hosting. So I was like, oh, we doing it here? Lit. And then I looked on stage, I saw like a whole bunch of stuff. I was like, oh shit, they got a band? And then I looked and I saw somebody come out of the little tarp. I was like, oh, somebody lived there.
Oh shit.
I was like, oh, this is, I was like, so we just gonna be performing in front of homeless people? But then I realized it was above the amphitheater, it was upstairs.
Yeah.
So, needless to say, my first mic I did there went okay. The second one, it had like 8 people. This third one had 15 people. Now, this is why I say there are comedians that do not need to be doing comedy outdoors. And I'm going to say this comedian's name. He's not even a comedian. He's not even a comic. He's just an open micer with no purpose.
Oh, shit.
His name is Phil. He's a Asian American. He's got long hair.
Damn, he describing, I don't know this man, show. People listening, I don't know this man.
So, but that has got nothing to do with it. The thing is, he is dark beyond belief.
Okay.
He is disrespectfully dark. He is Trump's ghostwriter. Put it that way.
Wait, is he darker than Roberto?
No. I mean content wise, he's dark.
Okay.
He's Asian. His name is Phil, but he's Chinese, and he says all this dark, outlandish shit. But we're convinced that there's something mentally wrong with him.
Okay.
Because let me tell you this joke he did. And for the viewers, I'm saying this because he said it, and a lot of comics that he hangs around allow him to do this.
Uh-oh.
He does this joke, and he says, why are there animal crackers and not animal niggers?
Wait. What?
You heard what I said. You can replay this episode. He said, why are there animal crackers and not animal niggers? We booed him in the park. Now, mind you, this literally just happened on Monday.
Yeah.
There's 15 comics behind me. There's one lady who actually stopped, who I got to stop and listen to the comedy show, the open mic. He goes up and does that, and we just start trashing him while he's sitting there. And he's been attempting comedy for the past, I would say, 3.5 years, 4 years. I don't know where he came from. Trump's toilet. I don't know, because he's
somebody gave birth to him.
Oh my goodness. So he does that, and I'm put into this awkward situation, because what these comedians need to understand, that shit was cool when you were doing it in a basement that was dark and the public couldn't hear you, but now you are outside, you say the wrong thing, somebody walking by and hear you, they're going to say something. And I'm glad this lady didn't say anything, because the whole time I'm bringing the comics up, I'm being funny. I'm always the funniest at an open mic that I host, that I can honestly say I host.
So a lot of times you're the funniest on the shows you're on too, whether you're hosting or not. Just saying. Not because I like you. But
I'm gonna take that with all shumbleness. Folks, if you don't know what shumble means be the shit but stay humble. So that's I'll take that with all shumbleness.
Shameless plug, ladies and gentlemen.
yes. So that is my that's my hashtag right there. Hashtag be shumble, be the shit, but stay humble. We'll probably get into that by the end of the episode. So this lady, clearly, she was jogging. A lot of comics weren't showing up. So I was like, hey, we got a comedy show. If you want to take a break from your exercise, you want to just sit down with us. She wound up staying for about 8 or 9 comics.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, she went on her way. But that right there, I was just like, these fucking open mic comedians do not get it. Oh, like, how do you not take into consideration the climate that we're in? And, oh, before he even did that disgusting joke, he was talking about like some other stuff, some he's like, he's why women deserve to be raped, and we're like, what?
That's terrible.
Are you serious? Are you serious right now?
Oh, he one of them creek in the cavers, huh?
Yes. And you want to know what's crazy? He went to Mocha's. He went to Mocha Lounge.
Really?
Yes, he did.
Oh, no.
He can. They were like, he can never come back. He is never allowed there. And Smokey's all about getting his ass whooped. Yeah, Smokey is lucky about... Smokey is good on giving chances to comics. Not him. Not him. It's such a shame. Nothing's changed moving to outdoor. I'm like, the world is in danger. Open mic comedians are the real pandemic that is happening. That is all I'm... That's all I'm saying.
That's crazy. That is crazy. Yeah. And then I know You recently did Instagram Live. Like, it was basically a show that was the show is from South Africa, right? You did that.
Oh yeah.
Last week. How was that?
That was dope. So the page is called Laughter on Lockdown. Shout out to this guy, Mario Campbell. He's from Capetown.
Cool.
Yeah, so, you know, he's always watched my page and everything. He's like, you're really funny. You know, I like your stuff. I like your content. So he had me go on. He interviewed me after he interviewed Rodney Perry. Shout out to Rodney Perry. Hope he's recovering well.
Word.
Our veteran comic, our big brother from Philly. He doesn't know it, but you know, we admire him, and
yes, we do.
We hope that you're recovering well and that you're healing well. So I go on, you know, they interviewed me after Rodney Perry, and I was like, yo, I'm getting interviewed after Rodney Perry. So they interviewed me, and the interview was so good, they wanted me to do it the next day.
Yeah.
So, you know, just talking with them, they're basically going through the same thing we are in the comedy community.
Yep.
Wherever they are, they're trying to put comedy shows on in the streets, in certain alleyways. I don't know.
On the roof, in the basement.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was our discussion. You know, the open mic scene is pretty much similar. But I'm glad that we got to have that connection, because, you know, we never know what the difference is from an open mic scene in a different country. We may know how it is in the U.S., but in a different country, we're like, is it the same? He was like, yeah, most of the open mics are pretty much terrible. And I'm like, oh, shit. Okay. Fair.
It is true. Everywhere you go. I mean, I've done, of course, you know, we're based out of New York, but I have done an open mic down south, like in Florida. And I was amazed that they were talking about the exact same thing that comics in New York were talking about at open mics. I was like, yo, this is crazy. So it's just as bad everywhere, I guess.
Yeah. The more personable the comic, I think the funnier.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you're talking about them. You're not talking about the same thing the last couple of comics were talking about.
Yeah.
And it's just what annoys me the most, and this probably does for you too. I know it does. When comics get up there and they try jokes, and comic after comic keeps bringing up the same subject, they all set it up the same.
Yeah.
You know the thing about COVID? Like, COVID, can you say something much more creative?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, are you not listening?
No, they don't. A friend of ours falls asleep at every show we do with her.
Oh my god.
And then
goodness.
Goes on and be like, I'm next. Anyway,
no, I'm next.
I wasn't even ready. Yeah, you're right. You're right. I know comics that they'll, because I used to do that too in the beginning. I used to, when I used to do bringers at Caroline's, I used to listen to my music before I went on. And that's a bad thing. You got to listen to the show. Like, you have to be in the room listening to what's going on. So you can not talk about the same thing that the previous 10 or 8 comedians, however many are ahead of you. And exactly. you got to know the energy too. You got to know what they're laughing at. Like, what, you know, so that way when you go up, you're there to ride the wave of the comic who hopefully killed before you.
Yeah, hopefully.
So, yeah,
that's one. It's that's one brutal thing when you get up there and you didn't listen to the crowd, or you didn't listen to, you know, the set, and you know, you weren't present in the room, and you get up there and you do something that just like really throws the energy off. Like, yeah. One thing that got on my nerves when I got past at the comic strip and I was doing late night, it would always bother me to see comics doing crowd work with people when crowd work was done by the host from the main show.
Yep.
Yeah. Like the comic, the host knew everybody's name, their situation, and everything. That's why I would always sit in there so I could listen.
Yeah.
And a lot of times what happens is they get up there and they start doing crowd work with people, questions that have already been answered. And some of the audience from the very first show, they'll stay for the newer acts just to see, you know, who's coming up. Yeah. Also to get 2 free tickets.
Yeah.
So they would stay to the end, and I would always see it would be a good group of people, but comic after comic doing that crowd work shit, yeah, not paying attention. Everybody, yep, getting up and leave. Everybody getting up and leave. Everybody been getting up and leave. And I would always be like the last or second to last comic, and I would just kill with whoever I had.
Yeah.
Because I'm just like, yo, why do y'all keep doing the same shit? Like,
you guys a couple? Where you guys from? You guys married? Got kids? First time in New York? And you'd be like, wait, they just heard that an hour ago. Why are you doing it again?
Yeah. Like, you don't know how many times it was like, I would go up, I would be like 10th on the late night list at the comic strip. 7 to 8 comedians done went up, all terrible, doing the same thing, crowd work, not asking the same person where they from. And it'd be a crowd full of people and just 2 by 2, group by group, getting up and leave. Now, in my mind, I had energy prepared for 12 people, but when I get up there, I got 3.
Yeah.
But those 3 people, they get the best of the late night that they got from the first show. So whatever first show energy they got from the last guy.
Yeah.
On the late night, which was me.
Yeah.
And I was just like, this isn't worth it. And, you know, shout out to Richie. Shout out to Richie, the owner of the comic strip. I was like, bro, why do you keep putting me on last? But, you know, it was like, you know, you got to pay your dues.
Yeah. Yep.
You got to pay your dues. You got to get your stripes up. But I'm like, yo, I've been getting my stripes up every week.
And that's the thing. They don't know what we do outside of their venues. They have no idea. They have no idea.
But yeah, shout out to the comic strip. And I think, man, the comic strip. I used to go there just to write.
Yeah.
I would sit out, you know, before the first show started, I would just sit by the table and write when I was going, you know, week after week. But then I started seeing all the newer guys coming up, and I was just like, this is what the fuck y'all talking about? Like, ew.
Was I gonna ask? What was the first show you produced? Do you remember?
It was my birthday show when I was doing it at this spot called Cafe Addis.
Okay.
It was in Harlem. It was on 125th between Morningside and Amsterdam. It was an Ethiopian spot. When I found that cafe in October of 2010. Right in Harlem, I could go to it right after work and then go home.
Yeah.
So it was right there, and they had that spot for like 2 years. And I remember going every Monday. I even had people from my job going to check me out. And they saw that I was bringing people every week. They paid you for bringing people.
Okay.
So I would bring like 25 people, 13 people at one time. And they was like, yo, he's bringing real audience. And then, you know, that was when Chloe Hilliard was there. Yeah. She was trying stuff out. Yeah.
Yeah.
She was like, how you keep winning money and he ain't even funny? I remember. I remember.
We love you, Chloe.
We love you, Chloe.
He said it. I ain't said it.
No, but it's true. Like, you know, I was like, I wasn't funny, but I was always bringing people, but I was always getting money for bringing people. And so I remember, like, my first show was like 3 months in. Shout out to Alex Barnett and Kevin J. Williams for putting me on my first show. So, you know, they had me on. They was like, oh, he's going to bring people. That's why they put me on the show. Because, you know, they wanted me to get my legs up and stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, realizing it now, I saw what they did. But yeah, they paid me when I was bringing people to Cafe Addis. So fast forward, they stopped producing the open mic there. They stopped doing the open mic there. So I took it over.
Yeah.
But that's when comics stopped coming because they didn't know me. They're like, he's new. So, like, we don't really know him like that. So we're not going to come there because we don't know him.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the show that I produced was my birthday show. And I had like 12 comedians on. And these were comedians I thought were funny. And not realizing, are they funny to my audience? And a lot of them didn't do good. They were not laughing. They were not laughing at all.
They were not laughing.
And then I was just like, why didn't they laugh? I think they're funny. And then I had to realize you have a black audience.
Yes, stuff sir.
That they were talking about wasn't crossing over with them.
It wasn't relatable.
Wasn't, exactly. So needless to say, that was my first learning lesson into picking a stronger lineup for the audience that I have.
Yeah.
So that point on, I produced my birthday show. It was a lot of comedians. But then, you know, later on, I started doing like hosting gigs and stuff.
Yeah.
And those fared out pretty well, but nah. My birthday show was the first show I ever produced.
Okay. So, all right. So in the last 10 years, what would you say was your favorite show?
Oh man, this guy, shit, what was my favorite show? Oh man, I've had so many. I think some of my favorite shows was at Carolyn's.
Oh yeah?
Definitely.
What'd you do at Carolyn's?
So, if a lot of y'all don't know, Justin and I, we have a show, or we had a show called Better Not Bring Your Kids Comedy Show. And our group is called the Leaders of Stand-Up. So that's our production. So the Leaders of Stand-Up presents Better Not Bring Your Kids Comedy Show or Get Your Weight Up Comedy Show. But Better Not Bring Your Kids at Caroline's was definitely my favorite one. I forget which one it was. I think it was it had to be a 2017 or a 2018 show. where I did the first one, where I did the, where I brought out the pop locking on the train bit.
Okay.
Or, yeah, or when I first brought out Facts Fire.
Yeah.
And my girlfriend at the time, now fiance.
Congratulations.
She was in the back and she was recording me and she was doing a pan around of everybody in the audience and they were just dying laughing. And I remember doing my Facts Fire joke and she pointed over to the side and this dude was just up, standing up out of his seat, clapping. And I honestly felt like that was one of my favorite shows.
Do you remember your least favorite?
Oh, goodness, yeah. it's plenty of those, but one sticks out in my mind so much. When we had Better Not Bring Your Kids before Caroline's, when we were at Broadway Comedy Club.
Oh, no, we ain't never getting invited back.
Yo.
That was worse than Eastville?
Worse than Eastville. I mean, Eastville, we still had an audience. We still did good. The one at Broadway Comedy Club was the one that my grandmother showed up to.
Oh.
My grandmother showed up to see me perform for her first time. And my family is there. I'm hosting. I got on this bright red jacket. I had on a Deadpool hat. And I'm like literally just what they call host bombing because I am so afraid to tell my jokes because I was like, I don't know if my family gonna think my jokes is funny. So I completely abandon my set and I try to do some improv shit with my family. And I tell a story about my grandmother where I say, and I quote, "I call her an asshole." If you could have saw the expression on my aunt, uncles, and cousins' faces. I felt like the leaf that I was on my family tree dried up and I just fell. Just crumbled. Oh my goodness, that was uncomfortable. And for the rest of the night, I was trying to do shit. No. It wasn't happening. Wasn't happening. Wasn't happening.
So it wasn't the club owner, Al Martin, if you're listening to. It was just he was having a bad day. We still love you, Al. We still love the club. You know what I'm saying?
Yes,
when
we do.
Back up, you know who to call, man. You know we your favorite duo.
Yeah, man. You know, I see they got that plexiglass thing happening. So I'm like, oh, they're going to do real shows? What's up?
Let us know.
But I've had a lot of great, great shows, especially at Harlem Nights.
Yeah.
So if anybody doesn't know, I've been at this bar venue called Harlem, this music venue. It's like a bar and a music venue called Harlem Nights. And I was there for 5 years.
Yep.
I was there for 5 years, every Monday, open mic. And then I just started turning the open mic, the last Mondays of the open mic, into a regular show. And, of course, I got a Wednesday, but that's because I was working with somebody I no longer work with.
Yeah.
So a lot of those sets that I did at Harlem Nights were my favorite sets.
Yep.
Were like my ultimate favorite shows where I think my 1 hour special was my favorite show.
Okay.
Because I really got to stretch my time, mm-hmm. stretch my material to see what I had and see what I was capable of. and to have people there that were just there for me and that were there invested in me to hear what I had to say. It was easily one of my favorite shows.
Yeah. Cool, cool. Do you you ever heard, I don't know if I ever told you this before, but I can't remember who it came from. Oh, it came from Omar. Veteran comedian, Omar Thompson.
Shout out to Omar Thompson.
Shout out to Omar with his pool party comedy show he just did in his new crib.
That was dope. And he's a Harlem native too, so shout out to him for that.
I mean, secret location. It wasn't at his house. No, but Omar said this one time to me and another good brother of ours, Mills. He said one time we was at a show and he was like, we had asked him something about I think Mills brought up a comedian and was like, yo, this person don't do comedy no more. Like, what's up with that? And I remember Omar saying, well, you know, like, you'll notice as the years go on, like 10 years, 15 years, 20 years and beyond, you'll notice that a lot of the diehards are still going to be here. And then, like, and I'm paraphrasing. And then a lot of people are just going to, like, fade away. Like, you'll know who really wants to do it and who really doesn't want to do it because they're not doing it anymore. So with that said, in the last 10 years, do you, like, how many people do you remember, like, starting with? Like, are a lot of them still doing comedy now?
I don't even see a lot of them. I know some of them have gone to L.A. to really pursue it.
Yeah.
Others that I see, you know, they do it sometimes or, you know, they change their religion, you know. Mm-hmm. So, I started with a lot of folks who were already in it like 2 years, 3 years.
Yeah.
And I still see them now. And I'm like, oh, they getting work, you know, they getting stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, it took me a while to realize that, you know, they were already doing this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So they already had some type of traction and they've done the road and they've been to LA and did stuff like that. Yeah. So, but a lot of people who started the same time as me, I think just you.
Really?
Wow. Yeah.
That's crazy.
As a matter of fact, no, there's shout out to my man Mike Brown. Mike Brown, he's a heavyweight now.
Mm-hmm.
My guy Dylan Stevenson. But I know he was doing it like a year prior to me.
Yeah.
But still, you know, relatively new and everything. So, Sophia Nurse, I remember she came back for a little bit last year and we was hitting
word. She did. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She went with me to Irish Whiskey Bar in Astoria, destroyed it.
Yeah.
Destroyed it. Oh, I know what happened. She came to Harlem Nights first, did a set, bodied, and then we went to Irish Whiskey Bar in Astoria and bodied.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, for me, like, I know, like, me, I started out, I took a class at Caroline's, and there was a group of 40 students, and four of those people are still doing it out of the 40 in that class.
How many?
40. 40. Oh. 40 started. And only four are still currently doing stand-up. I'm one of the four.
Oh, okay. Wow.
And then as far as, like, people over the years, I've seen a lot of people drop off. I can't remember off the top of my head, but a lot of people have dropped off. But like, it's like you said, like, in Sophia's case, you know, people will come back and they'll start doing it again, you know. Cheo, right? One of the funniest comedians that I know.
Oh, Cheo?
Yeah, Cheo will he'll take a hiatus, come back, and you see him all the time, and then he'll take a break. But he's never really stopped doing it. he disappears that time. But so you'll see that. But there are a lot of people that I know in the last 10 years that just aren't doing it anymore. They'll still come to shows on occasion and, you know, come watch and stuff like that. But they're not really actively doing it anymore.
Chael is a consistent Mills. Like, that's what he is. Shout out to our leaders and stand up brother, Mills Miller.
So we at the hour mark, so we pretty much at the end. But before we go, don't we have a show coming up?
Oh yes, ladies and gentlemen. I will be celebrating my 10-year comedy anniversary in Brooklyn at a spot called Quickie's Cuisine. The name of the show is Shumble Comedy Show. If you already know, I told you earlier, Shumble, be the shit, but stay humble. So it's the Shumble Comedy Show. Justin will be featuring for me, and hosting will be the very funny JJ Matisse. You can listen to our conversation, me and JJ Matisse conversation on my podcast, The Struggle Beard Podcast,
yes,
episode 8.
Yes, sir.
So she will be hosting, Justin will be featuring, and I'll be closing out the show. And we also have two other comics on that show as well. Shout out to Ishmael and Dory Dimples.
Oh yeah.
So it's gonna be a good show. If you want tickets, ladies and gentlemen, just go right to Eventbrite and look up Shumble Comedy Show. That's Humble with an H with a S. Humble with a S. Shumble Comedy Show. Get your tickets now. All right. If you're in the New York area.
Yeah.
Please
tell
do
people,
get
yeah, tell people where they can follow you, man.
Oh, Instagram, comedian_RBashir2. comedian_RBashir2. And on Twitter is C_Bashir2. C_Bashir2.
Oh, this brother's persistent. very good, very good. This has been another episode of Just a Kid from Brooklyn. You can catch this show on all platforms that are streaming podcasts. So we're going to share this right after. You can follow me on everything, including Xbox Live, at Justin the Comic. All together, no spaces, no underscores, Justin the Comic. I love you guys. Remember, wash your hands and wash your ass and wear that motherfucking mask. Peace out. Peace.